From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of October 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County will take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets with us, talk about basis through the end of the week, how they've been stalled out over the past couple of days because of weather and rainfall, and what their expectations are for the changes in basis as we move into the end of the year. As we close out our time together, we'll continue to take a look at the weather forecast, this time in depth with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, and it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon, the 23rd day of October. Don't forget to buy your Farm Assets Conference tickets. You can do that online at willag.org at the farmassetsconference.com website or by calling this number. It's 800-898-1065. One of the folks that will be on hand with us to talk about the price of soybeans on that panel at the Farm Assets Conference is Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and he joins us now. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us, and thanks for coming to the Farm Assets Conference in November, too.
Oh, what a great event. It's sort of the kickoff, the start of the marketing tour during the winter. Hopefully, guys, I have most of the harvest wrapped up, field work complete, and be able to be there, Todd.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, and actually, I kind of hope that they'll just go ahead and buy their tickets now and not make me sweat it out later, but sometimes that doesn't work out. We'll see how that goes. However, they were probably feeling a little better, especially about corn prices today. Wheat rallied. Soybeans were the laggard, but let's start with the corn. What happened?
Yeah, better prices, better yield, so it don't get any better than that. We'll see if we can continue this momentum. A little weak trade overnight, sort of just kind of lost a whole lot of interest, but as we moved into the day session, the trend shifted fairly quickly. Sort of pushed down near the lows we made here last week when the crop report came out. Unable to follow through, and the funds being short as they are, had to kind of buy the way out. They were short over 186,000 contracts of corn. Just couldn't find the follow through in there. And as they came in to buy, there was just not a whole lot of sell orders above the marketplace, and it sort of created a vacuum. What helped the corn and wheat particularly was spread unwinding. We saw the trade come in and sell beans, buy corn, sell beans, buy wheat on the spreads. These big funds oftentimes have spread activity to sort of manage their risk, and we saw quite a bit of activity take place there. Export inspections report was huge for the beans, not enough to get the market real excited. Shipped out almost 94 million bushels of beans, corn right in expectations, and the wheat was kind of the lower end. Technically, sort of a dynamic day in the corn complex. Came down, made a new low for this little down move, did not quite take out last week's low, and crop report low, but we were able to come back and close above the previous day high. So we had an outside up day. When you look at the corn chart there. So we're in position to record a weekly price reversal to the upside. Then you won't be optimistic if we push above 355 here before month's end. We could almost have a monthly price reversal to the upside. So there's some reason to be kind of optimistic when you look at these price charts in here as we continue to push sideways, but building a fairly strong base here as we move forward.
Yeah, posting an outside up day is a good thing. Posting an outside up day and finishing up on the very top end of the range, or darn close to it, just about a half set off the top, is also a very good sign. So corn finding some legs under it. Can this be the start of something? It sounds like you feel as if there might be something here. What do you see?
Yeah, we get that feeling. You know, we advertise the Columbus Day holiday, and traditionally you start getting turns here during the month of October. The conspiracy theory guys need to get going here if they want some higher prices to avoid some insurance payments. Because when you look at the average price, we're at $349, quite a bit off that spring high. But also, too, I think the trade, well, I hope the trade's looking long-term. I think they're starting to look long-term. China's made significant, or quite a few announcements that, they're going to get a little bit more serious about cleaning up their air, more ethanol usage. And when you look at corn ending stocks in China, we were at close to this 110 million metric ton area. We dropped down to 100. This last year, we're down under 80 million metric tons. And if they kick this ethanol usage in, they're talking about another 30 to 40 million metric tons of usage of corn to get to that ethanol point. You couple that with an already tight stocks-to-use ratio for corn in China. There's some big fireworks, another year or two down the road. It's sort of a long-term commitment, but the trend's there. So with some positive long-term news and ideas that this corn harvest could wrap up here, in the main growing regions here in another few weeks, maybe pushing the market to the downside might not be the thing to do here for a while.
Speaking of which, do you have some guesstimates for this afternoon's crop progress or weekly crop progress and weather report?
Yeah, for the harvested acres, a lot of guys finished up beans here Saturday night. I think they went 24/7 all week long, knowing that these weather forecasters were predicting change in the forecast, and it could get a little bit more tricky here for those who are not finished here in the central part of the Midwest. I think they're getting fairly close. Be interested to see how the states jumped as a whole here. The big ones are the beans. Last week, beans as a nation, we were 49% complete. The trades looking for as a nation will be anywhere from 60 to 67% complete. I think we'll be at the higher end of that. Corn harvest last week was 28%. The trade's looking for about 40 to 49%. We might be about 45 to 40 because guys really pushed these beans hard this past week, Todd.
Anything else on the livestock side before I let you go?
Well, kind of a cattle and fade report. We saw the actually cattle come in here and close higher. The significance of that is the cattle and feed report indicated higher placements, 113%. That's 5% above expectations. The market did trade lower, but was able to come up out of the hole. The thing about the cattle complex, big numbers, but we got big demand, and the market's holding in there quite well. So that's going to be some optimism here. And try to push the December fads on up back up towards the 118 area. Bad day in the hog complex, moved up to the 65 area in the D's, unable to follow through there. Collapse, had an outside down day in the hog complex, so hog prices might have seen a top here for the next month or two.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities. In today's agricultural news today, in fact, all this week, more than 65,000 FFA members will arrive in Indiana for their national convention as the city of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana are ready to roll out the blue carpet to welcome back the FFA. National FFA President David Townsend says the theme of this year's convention stresses achievement and community service.
The theme is I Can, We Will. So it demonstrates that individually we are capable. We have our skills and abilities that we've been gifted with. But together, when we combine those with the abilities of others, we're able to make an even bigger impact.
Indianapolis, by the way, will host the National Annual FFA Convention through 2024. And it is literally turning the city blue. On Thursday, the canal that runs through the heart of downtown was dyed blue in honor of FFA. From Indianapolis, we'll head to Washington, D.C., where the fiscal 2018 budget introduced last week could make moot the $10 billion in cuts to ag programs that were in the House version. That's a move that makes the passage of the next farm bill easier. Backers of SNAP had been bracing themselves for the prospect that the spending cuts would be squarely aimed at welfare programs, including food stamps. But the Senate version does not include the $203 billion in spending reductions the House had incorporated. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where trade negotiators are at odds over NAFTA proposals. Trade negotiators are accusing each other of sabotaging attempts to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement following the latest round of talks. Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland accused the U.S. of pursuing a winner-take-all approach. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer said of the talks that the NAFTA trade partners do not seem willing to make any changes regarding the trade deficit, a key Trump administration priority. After a failed round of talks, the renegotiation effort was extended into next year. The next set of negotiations will be held next month in Mexico. From D.C., we'll head to Kansas now, where the Federal Reserve Bank there reports farm lending has stabilized, but that risks still remain. The Federal Reserve's Agricultural Finance Data Book shows risks in the sector have remained alongside a persistently weak agricultural economy. The volume of non-real estate farm loans originated in the third quarter this year increased about 2% from the previous year. Operating loans have continued to account for a rising share of commercial banks' farm loan portfolio, accounting for nearly 60% of the total volume of non-real estate farm loans over the past year. The report says that the risk ratings on new farm loans have increased somewhat, interest rates have edged higher, and the loan-to-deposit ratio, a key measure of bank liquidity, also has increased. And finally, in case you have not heard this one yet, on Friday, Monsanto went after Arkansas agricultural officials, that's the state level, when seeking to block a decision to prohibit the use of dicamba during the summer months. Monsanto is now suing the Arkansas Pesticides Board. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, the 21st day of November. Tickets are easy to get. You can buy them online at willag.org, willag.org, or at the farmassetsconference.com website. That's farmassetsconference.com. Of course, you can just dial in and buy them as well at 800-898-1065. It's a day-long event in Normal, Illinois. The tickets are just $35 each. The number again to call, 800-898-1065. Now up next, you know, the National Corn Growers Association, NCGA, is hopeful the recent dicamba-based herbicide label changes will lead to better results and stability moving forward. Michael Clements from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting has more.
The Environmental Protection Agency recently announced the label changes, including the listing of dicamba for crop use as a restricted-use product. Nathan Fields, NCGA Director of Biotechnology and Crop Inputs, explains why the label change was needed.
Well, there was a lot of growing pains with some of these formulation of these products out here. I think the companies that got the registrations went to deep efforts to make sure that the chemistry was correct and really did a lot of great outreach prior to these products going commercial. But again, you know, the first time people use stuff, first time it gets out there in the field, I think they found out that they needed to take that training seriously, and all the recommendations that were on that label needed to be followed pretty closely. So this is just a way of addressing some of the mistakes that we saw in the first couple of years.
For growers, he says the label change means restrictions on who and under what conditions dicamba can be applied.
It's a good compromise is what happened. So essentially this becomes a restricted use product. So you need to have a license and have to be a certified applicator to put this out, but now most growers, if they're putting down insecticides anyway, they're going to be a certified applicator already. But it does put that bit of an extra restriction around it. It does also have some restrictions about the time of day. What it doesn't have, though, is restricted windows during the growing season. So it can still be used, albeit it needs to be used correctly, but it still can be used when the product is needed.
Label change applies to the new low volatility dicamba products. Older dicamba products, he says, should not be used.
Those new dicamba products, those that are rated and supposed to be used with those dicamba-tolerant corn and soybean products out there, those are the ones that have these additional restrictions. Now, if you have older formulations of dicamba that are out there, those are not supposed to be used. And that's because they don't have that volatility restriction. It would be an off-label use of those, and growers need to avoid that. They need to stick with the branded ones that go with the dicamba-tolerant products that they plant.
Growers who are interested in using dicamba-tolerant plants and dicamba herbicides should reach out to their seed representatives to ask questions and to learn more about the application restrictions and how to properly apply the herbicides. In doing so, Fields says that should help lead to a best-case scenario next year.
Best-case scenario for next year is that we see a whole heck of a lot less reported off-target incidents, that growers kind of get the gist of it, they understand it, they take the label to heart and take those extra steps that are needed. We'll have less complaints. I mean, there's always going to be issues that happen here and there, year to year, different products. But if we could get those numbers significantly down, get better coexistence between growers, better communication, better understanding, I think that would be a success.
That's Nathan Fields, NCGA Director of Biotechnology and Crop Inputs. Learn more online at www.ncga.com. Michael Clements reporting.
We're now joined by Amy Sage. She's at the Andersons right here in Champaign County to talk about the cash grain market. Hey, Amy, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Hey, things a little quieter there, I suppose, today than they have been in about a week and a half or so.
From a receipts perspective, absolutely. Today's paperwork day.
A lot of paperwork, I bet you're
right.
Doing. It's catch-up day for
that's
you.
That's right. That's
hey,
right.
What do you all think about the bounce in the corn market today?
A little surprised by it, to be honest about it. Evidently, it was mostly sparked by some short covering in both corn and wheat. Beans were struggling a little bit earlier on in the day with South American weather, but a little surprised to see this recovery, but we'll definitely take it. So,
did anybody take advantage of going ahead and pricing rather than setting into commercial storage for the day?
Some, but not really much to speak of, to be honest about it. We've seen more selling of beans than we have of corn, which we anticipated just from a cash flow management perspective going into this year. And with the, looking at gross dollars per acre, beans compared to corn is just much more attractive to sell beans. And that's what we've been seeing guys do.
What do you see to the end of the year for basis?
As we get further and further along with corn harvest, it can go one of two ways. You know, as people want to make sure that they fill space, sometimes we see a bounce that last 20% of harvest in basis. Other times if people are getting filled up, then it can go a little bit lower. But I would say between now and the end of harvest, you might see a little bit of improvement, but we won't probably see significant improvement until combines stop rolling and get to that last half of November, get towards the holidays.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Amy Sage. She is with the Andersons. When we come back, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Let's check now the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here, Todd.
Well, let's start in the Midwest. Cold and wet. Looks like it's going to kind of stay that way for a little bit, but do we change patterns again sometime?
Yeah, certainly more fall-like weather has advanced here into the middle of the country. It's going to be with us for the next 10 days or so. Primarily the rain activity, well, some of it here lingering today in sections of the eastern Corn Belt, even into tomorrow in some sections as well. We then will have actually drier weather across much of the western Corn Belt, especially west of the Mississippi River, actually throughout the next 10 days. So while temperatures are unseasonably cool, it's on the drier side west of the Mississippi and then east of the Mississippi, a little bit of rain, but most of that is actually just focused over the next few days. However, it does look like beyond that time frame, after the next 10 days, begin to moderate. And we feel that as we go into, this is more so week two and week three of November, actually temperatures beginning to warm back up again. So we do not see this as being the start of a cooler, wetter period here for the Midwest that would start to really, bog down harvest progress. But certainly temperature-wise, much, much different, albeit brief. And no sign of any wet patterns here coming up really for the next several weeks.
That takes care of the harvest season here in the Corn Belt. What about the planting season and progress that's happening in South America?
Well, the focus of attention has been the dryness in central West Brazil, as well as the northeastern soybean belt in Brazil. The bottom line is that for the next few weeks, the pattern is turning much more active, many more opportunities for rainfall, and ultimately a gradual diminishment of the dryness across that region. And once the rains kick in, that will help initiate planting yet again across the region. And so the fact that it's happening here in late October into the early part of November, a slight delay in planting progress, but overall, once these rains kick in, that's pretty much will keep them in good shape as we go throughout November.
And finally, we've been hearing that little word La Nina around some. Do we need to worry about that at all?
Well, I think it's too early to be worried about it, but La Nina is here in our opinion. We've already seen sea surface temperatures reach those levels of minus 0.5 Celsius anomalies across the central and eastern Pacific Ocean. And we see all indications pointing towards La Nina continuing here. So we need to keep an eye on that, especially not just in the La Nina, like equatorial waters, but what we think is more important is do those cooler than normal waters begin to expand away from the equator? That's actually a more important signal. In our opinion, that's something we're going to be watching closely over the next couple of months.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do check us out online at willag.org. There you can pick up your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference, or you can do that by dialing this number, 1-800-898-1065. Again, that's 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org. Tickets are just $35.